Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Beautiful fade. You were just like, and I'm done.
There's not an automatic fader on here anymore. It just sort of you have to do it manually, and my hands slipped. That
was, you know, you were like, I'm going to do this gracefully, and
it was fading the good halfway.
And then no.
And then I was like, enough. This is not automatic fader anymore.
I know. They changed the whole system
on you. I just hit the button, and it would fade out.
I know. What's up with that?
I could go 2, 4, 6, 8 second fade.
And now it's just...
Now I got to click and pull down.
Oh.
While I'm turning the microphones on.
You're multitasking, Eddie.
I'm not.
You know why? Because they're testing you.
I want to fail.
It's the
fire
man.
Me.
It's the man.
I want to be done.
Testing you, dude. How's life? How was your week? What have you been up to?
Nothing.
Same as always. I love your Trump posts.
Oh, my. What? Which one?
Dude, all of them. Every single one I've read, it's just like... You remember yesterday?
I'm trying to put a positive spin on it. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do a positive spin.
You know, it's funny. It's like now everybody's Facebook posts are all about Trump, including mine. You know, like I tried not to. I tried to resist. But then
he can't
keeps,
help it, man.
He just makes you want to write about him. You know what I mean? It's like he just pisses you off.
And everybody thinks I'm related to the vice president, and I got to keep explaining I'm not.
That guy's a smug mofo.
He's a piece of...
Ugh. Yeah, he is... Seriously, he just looks like a guy that you just want to hit in the face.
He calls his wife mother.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
I read an interview or something somewhere.
Wait, what interview did you... What interview?
I'm sure it was real news, like everything.
That's pretty creepy, dude.
Yeah! Mother.
That's very creepy. I ain't gonna lie, that's above and beyond.
I don't know, whatever, who cares?
You know what, it's just...
My opinion's like everybody's asshole. Or something like that.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
It's gaping.
Something like that.
And it stinks.
Something like that.
No, you know, it's funny. It's like he keeps on doing things. Did you hear about how he, like, cut the National Endowment for the Arts?
He did that a while ago.
I know. And then it's like the executive ban on Muslims, which people are saying it's
not
a Muslim
ban. Yeah,
but
are they doing this crazy shit because they're doing something really fucking sinister that we don't even know about?
I'm sure. And you know the crazy thing is
because they're
like,
hey, well, look at this dumpster fire over here while they're doing something that no one even knows about.
So you probably read the same articles that I did.
Everybody's reading the same articles because it's everywhere.
Yeah. The crazy thing is it's like you just don't know what those guys are up to. And the really sad thing is he's... relating it to 9/11, that's his reasoning for doing all of this, but yet he's not holding any of the countries actually affiliated with 9/11.
No, because he has businesses in those countries.
Yeah, and it's just like, dude, how do people... It's so tough to have a debate with people that are in support of him because they're just so clouded by all of that, you know? It's just... I don't know. I think Hollywood's going to have a field day, hopefully, with... I mean, you should be doing Trump jokes left and right, Eddie.
I don't like doing political humor. I'm not... I feel like... When people go to comedy club, they want a break from that shit.
That's true. Yeah, but you know what? If it's a good joke, it's a good joke.
Yeah, but I don't want to do it. I want a break from that shit.
Yeah, no, I know.
You know, I don't.
George Carlin was great about that. Who's your favorite like political satirist or comedian?
I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even like really watch. I don't even really like political humor that much.
I I've always loved like comics and doodles and stuff. Like Gary Larson is awesome.
Yeah,
he does political stuff with animals that I think is just amazing. But, like you'll see his political beliefs through like his little cartoons and sketches. I love those. And George Carlin's definitely my favorite political satirist, I guess you should say.
I don't know, man. He got so dark towards the end, he was hard to watch.
He's jaded.
It was so bad. I mean, it's still great, still brilliant stuff, but it was hard for me to...
Did you see Aziz Ansari? I heard he killed on Saturday Night Live last week.
That was a couple weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I thought it was last week.
Oh, who was the host on this week?
I don't know, I don't really watch Saturday Night
Live. Saturday Night Live, let's talk about that for a second. Saturday Night Live kind of sucks.
I haven't watched it literally since I was in high school. Like, I just don't
watch
it.
It used to be amazing in high school.
I just don't watch it.
Well, I mean, did you enjoy it when you were in high school? Like, some, did you think it was good?
Some, like, stuff.
It was amazing. Chris Farley was amazing. Mike Myers was amazing. Dana Carvey was amazing. I mean, that cast was insane.
I watched some of that cast, but like when Will Ferrell was there, I watched some. But I've never been like an avid Saturday Night Live watcher. I just never have.
I used to be through like the 80s and 90s.
I did before I could go out. Yeah. Like when I was stuck at home with a little kid, I'd watch it. But like I don't like people bash on Saturday Night Live. I mean, it's a hard thing to do because they're doing the way the show's set up. You got to do sketches. You have to have a 3-minute sketch. You have to have a 7-minute. The sketches are based on time,
right?
Not the end. Okay, this is the funniest part of this joke. Let's end it here. Oh, we have another minute and a half?
You think it's really political how Lorne Michaels chooses the sketches?
Probably. I don't know.
Because I also feel like, there were a couple years within the last 5 years I'd watch Saturday Night Live and be like, dude, I think my high school theater, you know, group could have done
this.
Yeah, but
what they're asked to put up on a weekly basis is, it's amazing to generate that kind of deal. But the same thing, you're stuck with like, okay, this, we need 6 5-minute sketches and 4 3-minute sketches and 1 7-minute sketch. I mean, and it's got to be, you got to write it to the time. You can't write it to the joke.
Right.
So, yeah, you might have a sketch that's, oh, this is a funny idea for a sketch if it was over in a minute and a half.
Right.
But you got another 4.5 minutes you got to fill.
And they don't ever break it up if you have, like, they can't do
No, because two. It's the way it's TV. There's commercial breaks. It's set up and it's live, so it's got to be set up a certain, I mean, it's like they're really constricted by the format of the show.
I have a friend that plays in the band. And it's crazy because the Saturday Night Live band in the 80s was such a big feature. You know what I mean? Like G.E. Smith.
Yeah.
They would always do this killer break.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't do those as much. And they have a killing band. They have a killing band.
Yeah.
And they just don't feature the band as much. It's like, it's kind of a weird thing.
I mean, I don't rip on SNL too much, but I just don't watch it. I never really have. So.
You still love sketch comedy? That's kind of how we met, man.
I like performing sketch comedy. I don't like watching sketch comedy.
When was the last time you did sketch comedy?
Probably back then.
Oh, man. You were good.
Oh, thanks.
You were a good kid. You were a real good kid.
It's hard to get people together and rehearse and get an audience there. It's
dude, just... my dad still talks about the sketch with you and Joe as the Batman. He was Batman and Robin, wasn't it?
I was Batman.
Yeah, he was Robin.
He was Superman,
that's
and
right.
And Kino was Robin.
That's
and
right.
He and Kino and Robin had gone with Superman to be
that's
Superman's
a,
sidekick.
That's a great sketch. That is a... Honestly, that deserves to be on something like Saturday Night Live, but yet... you know, they're put up some pretty...
But then again, we wrote stuff. That over the course of a couple months and performed it, like, several times. So it found its niche and was able to be fleshed out, and they have a week.
Yeah, that's true.
And it gets put up once.
But they have tons of writers, too.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it better.
And it's like, how does it work? Like, it's like even if you're on the show, you really have to fight to get, like, to write a sketch, right?
From what I've heard, I assume, yeah, you got to really write for yourself and, like... figure out a way to get yourself into sketches.
I think that'd be such a cool gig. I mean, seriously, like just the challenge of it, just to be able to write in a week or even to play, like learn all that music. You know, the crazy thing is all those musicians, they sight read all the music. So it's like they are able to just, and some of the breaks and stuff they do are super intense.
Yeah.
So my friend was telling me, I was asking about the audition process, like, what was that like? And he said, oh man, they've just put you, like, they put the gnarliest music in front of you and you just have to read it like you've been playing it for 10 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. Like, that I'm not good at. I can get by with some sight reading, but not like I've been playing it for 10 years. No way. That was always, like, the hardest thing for me to do. I could do it with vocals, but with playing, it's a whole different thing. It's like I need to take the time to, like, you know, practice and get it to where it is. So I'm always, like, envious of musicians that can just, like, read like that. And you know what? From what I hear, the writing of the sketches is a lot like that, too, because... You know, they do have cue cards and stuff, but I mean, if you're using the cue cards, you're not in character usually. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but how can you memorize all? I mean, it's so much. It's just a lot. You know, it's a big undertaking to put on every week.
Yeah, but there's some great comics on there. I mean, like it's starting to like get to a point where it's getting good again. You know, I saw the Chappelle episode. I don't know if you saw that. But
no.
He did an hour.
I still watch
dude,
it.
Dude, the Chappelle episode was the best Saturday Night Live I've seen in probably like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
His monologue was amazing. It was just super on point, super sharp, super funny. He was a little bit political, but he was also, you know, talking about like meeting the Obamas and just like what that experience is like with his background. And then, you know, the sketches were funny too, but the sketches weren't as good as his monologues. I mean, his monologue.
Yeah.
Anyways, onwards and upwards, right? Looks like our special guest has arrived. One of my favorite people on the planet, Mr. George Artipe.
What's going on, fellas?
So, Eddie, I'm going to give you a little backstory. George and I have been singing together since USC days.
Wow.
We've been recently singing for the Lakers.
Fight on.
We've been singing for the Dodgers together. But he's our guest today as an editor and filmmaker, right?
Okay, I thought we could do some singing on
you. Oh, yeah. maybe. So, George, you showed me one of your first projects that I still think about a lot. You did a documentary on dancing. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that was cool. Was that like your student project at SC?
Student projects, man.
And you were a film major, right, at SC?
Yeah.
So George showed me this. It was like a, I want to say it was like a 15-minute documentary.
Yeah.
And it was on, like it was on ballet, jazz, breakdancing.
Man, you remember that, huh?
And I want to say it was like, yeah, hip-hop. Yeah, that's right.
Motion control.
Dude, it's so, I still think about that. You should put that online. Seriously, you really should.
Yeah, get some hits, right?
Dude, hey, don't be sarcastic with me. But you're doing bigger and better things now. But I mean, that's still one of my favorite
that's
things.
That's cool
you
that
do.
You remember that.
Oh, I remember it. Yeah, I remember the good stuff. Always the good stuff.
Always the good stuff.
So,
right.
big news. You just had a premiere last week. Why don't you tell us about it?
Saturday night. You know, date night, man.
That's right.
Yeah, Love by the 10th Date.
Starring, tell us about this project.
Megan Good and Kelly Rowland.
Where did it premiere?
Some singers in there. Lifetime.
Mm.
Yeah. So it was
George's
like
favorite.
My favorite.
Nice.
Nice. No, but that must have been, it's a big undertaking to like get stuff to network stuff, you know, to get on network stuff.
Yeah. Especially this one, you know, the circumstances I came in under were really intense, you know. I got the call and kind of had to step in there and clean up some mess, somebody else's mess.
Really?
And yeah, man, made it work. And director loves it. Everyone loves it at the network.
That's gotta be tough, though. It's like you have to see that in the beginning and be like, oh man, somebody really didn't do their job, and I gotta clean up this.
Well, yeah, exactly. it was rough, man. But no, everyone loves it. It's being pitched right now for a series.
That's dope.
And I think they had good ratings.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, you didn't watch it? You didn't check it out?
Of course I checked it out, but I don't know how the, you know, Nielsen or whatever ratings were.
Look
at
he's pulling out all the big words. <hey. laughs>
So, you know, but no, it was a fun project. Director is Nzinga Stewart, and we worked together a couple projects about 3 or 4 years ago, and just out of the blue, she called me up. She's like, you know, need you to come in here and help get this film in shape.
That's
awesome. And so, we had a nice collaboration, obviously.
Was it a full rough cut when you got a hold of it? Or,
There was a cut, yeah. But I didn't see it, you know.
So you just started from scratch?
I was instructed, not to look at it.
really?
So it's a whole fresh...
That's crazy.
The whole thing was a fresh take on your fresh take on it. It was just a complete...
Exactly. Right,
so you didn't work off... All right, cool.
Yeah, so, you know, pedal to the metal.
Wait. So how much footage did they give you?
I don't know. It was like, I think they shot 20 days or so. 18, 20 days, something like that. Yeah.
How long did you have to do it?
We had a few weeks, four or five weeks, you know. Yeah. It was
pretty, you were immersed.
It's pretty intense.
Whether you like the show or not, you're like, I'm in it.
It was pretty intense, man. But no, we got it done. And, you know, main thing is everyone loves the product.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that.
All the ladies love it. You know, it's a great flick.
That's awesome.
Check it out.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, when you were working on it, what was the biggest obstacle?
Oh, man. Actually, scenes kind of like this, I realize, are like the toughest scenes to cut.
You mean why? Because of the camera?
Or like dinner table scenes. Because you have like, in our case, there were a couple scenes with about 6 or 7 people at a table.
Yeah, there's so much continuity you got to keep track of.
Oh, man, and it's like...
Oh, your arm's up? Why are you touching your face right now?
Not only do you have to cover the lines, but like all the reactions too.
Right.
Like who do you go to when, and you know, who's the main... You know, what's the purpose of the scene and trying to sneak that in, all those subtleties. So, like, I realized after that, I'm like, those are the toughest scenes, those dinner table scenes. So I have, like, a huge appreciation for, like, any, like, dinner table scene or scene with just like multiple characters around a table.
How did you make the choice? What was the final, like, how did you make each choice? Each reaction? Like, what was, it was just like based on the most interesting expression or line or?
Yeah, well, I mean, as an editor, I like to cut the lines first, you know what I mean? Cut the dialogue of the scene and then.
Did you cut any out?
Go back. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the film was about, actually, we almost had a 2.5 hour cut initially. And we had to get down to, you know, 90 minutes.
Wow.
So we cut a lot, you know. But yeah, it's all, you know, I cut it first. You know, I get a rough cut, and then we start collaborating with the director, and the producer's coming eventually, and EPs and all that. And we get it down, man.
That's crazy.
We get it down.
I always feel like editors are like the unsung heroes of film and TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they really do.
Well, you're almost like the second director of the film.
Yeah.
Well, and we're like the final frontier, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I think it always starts on the page, you know. The writers, to me, are like, you know, close to God. But they're the ones that pull it out of thin air, right, and put it on the page. So it's got to be on the page. If it's not on the page, like, I can't even fix it, you know what I mean? Obviously, I've worked on all kinds of films and some bad ones as well because of the writing. It's just not there, you know what I mean?
That's probably
and,
the
you
toughest.
Know, cheesy or doesn't make sense or, you know, whatever, and that's all writing. But definitely editing is the final frontier, and I didn't realize, like, you're, like, giving birth to someone's baby.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what I compare, you know, editing to. Because it's already everything's already shot, but then you gotta, like, you know, put it all together and make it work. You know?
I did a 4.5 minute music video, and I asked the director, I said, give me all the cameras, all the camera shots,
right.
And I made notes just for a 4.5 minute video.
Right.
On every shot, I made notes, and I literally was like, I think editors are the greatest, like, in the whole process, because that's the hardest part.
Right, right.
Knowing the shots. Knowing where to put them,
yeah.
Knowing how to make it just drive
flow,
and work,
because
you control the flow.
Yeah,
I think that. I mean,
and
a lot of directors.
You probably wrote all those notes, and then you're like, "How the hell is someone going to put this together? Like, all my notes.
Yes,
how are you going to get it all in cut?"
And I would like star things, and you go back, and your star rating changes as you, you know, you're 2/3 into it, and you're like, you found better shots for the same shots, so your star ratings are different. For me, I found it to be very stressful and involved and such a like a painstaking. It's kind of a painstaking. You have to have immense patience, and I know you both do because Eddie, you also do some editing. You're like, yes.
I've never edited a feature film. So.
I mean, and then when you start putting shots together too, it's not always how you envisioned it, you know, because you don't know how, you know, shots play off of each other differently as well.
Right.
So, you know, that's why you just got to get in there and mix it up.
And she probably also thought she got shots that were like slam dunks. That maybe you were like, this is not, this sticks out like a sore thumb in some ways.
And
or maybe
vice
it
versa.
Did. Yes.
And vice versa,
yes.
You know. So it's, you know, that's why you shoot enough coverage, right, as a director. And make sure you got enough takes and enough angles. And hopefully give it to the editor and make it work.
How many cameras were, like, the most you had to, like, was every scene kind of, obviously, I think it would be different for every scene, right?
Yeah, different for every scene. I think at the most at one time was like 3 or 4 cameras.
Wow.
And that was for that dinner table scene, you know, because they're just trying to cover everybody. They only have a certain amount of takes to do it. So they're like, everyone start rolling, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so that's obviously the more footage for a scene, the longer it takes, you know, for us to put together. Because, you know, you want to watch everything. You want to see everything.
And
know?
Was audio, I always think like audio is just like, oh, it's no problem.
No, you know
but
what?
Dude, that's got to be another factor to have to deal with.
Especially in those scenes.
Right.
You know, because people start talking to each other.
Yeah.
You know? And as a director, you kind of want that. You kind of want that natural, you know, flow and reaction off each other. But then when people are stepping over lines, and as the editor, you're trying to cut to different takes.
My God.
It can get,
that's crazy.
It can get really messy. You know what I mean? But that's why, you know, sound guys get the big bucks. Come in and clean it all up.
Did you have to?
And they do ADR, you know, which is great.
Did you have to like contact the sound guys and be like, "Yo, I need this. I need a better."
No. I mean, we have all the dailies from the set and all the you know, sound dailies, so we can kind of listen to the takes. But you know, once those post sound guys get it, they're pros. You know, they know whether something needs to be ADR'd or whether they can work with it.
And did you also do the trailer? Did you do the trailer first, I assume?
No. That was done by the network, probably one of the trailer houses in town, you know, just for advertising.
That's crazy. Purposes.
But, yeah, usually the trailer is done. I think they started working on it a couple weeks before we finished, or like a week before we finished, you know.
I know this is kind of a dumb question because I've never really edited something that large. Yeah. Nothing more than 4 minutes for me.
Right.
But did you start like from the beginning and just go down, or did you kind of start, you know, work your way backwards? What's your process?
Yeah, I mean, on this one, for time crunch sake, I started from the beginning, you know, and just kind of worked. But when they bring an editor in at the beginning of a show, they don't always shoot from page one, right? It's based on the production schedule.
Right.
It makes sense. So you may start cutting scene 55 of the film, you know, the first day. You know, you never know. So,
From the first footage.
Yeah, in this case,
it's because you had the whole movie shot when you got it.
Exactly. The whole movie was already shot when I came in. And so it's just like, all right, start from the beginning. But yeah, like when I hit that scene with like six people, you know, I started it and then I was like, all right, this is like, you know, intense. Let me go to something simple. I'll skip to like scene 20. I'll come back to this, you know what I mean? So,
I wish I could have seen your face when you saw that.
Oh man, it's just like, it was like a few hours and I was actually left. I was like, I'm out. I need to sleep on this. It's just insane, you know?
And you have to do that sometimes. Oh, you have to do that with art, you know? Man. It's like, I'll do that with music all the time where it's like you get, you know, and I know editing's even more intense because you're dealing with audio and visuals, but
right. For
music, you're just dealing with the you know, yesterday I was doing major surgery on this, you know, minuscule part that you, like, nobody will ever notice, but it's like you need to make it right. And it just, I get so neurotic that it's like, yeah, you gotta take a break.
You start, you know, what we call frame fucking. And it's just like, you realize after 3 hours, you're like, I haven't done shit. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, I don't know.
You went for it before you knew. You could cuss.
You didn't warn me.
You know what's funny? It's like, I have so many good laughing moments with this guy. Like, having a serious interview with him is actually kind of difficult. Like, I'm asking you questions and he's giving me a serious answer. And I'm like trying so hard not to smile and laugh.
Man, we had some good time.
My cheeks are hurting, Eddie. My cheeks are hurting.
We had some good times, man.
So, let me ask you this. Like, you know, you went to USC.
Yeah.
You directed some stuff. You've worked on a ton of, like, crazy stuff. We actually sang for Carlos Santana. One of the best concerts of my life that been a part of was because of you and your dad. That concert was unbelievable. We played a concert with Carlos Santana and Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter with this like 20-piece band and like 20 dancers.
Yeah,
and,
man.
I mean, it was so over the top.
Incredible.
I'm still chasing that sound and that feeling.
Oh, man.
That was...
That energy.
Oh,
that
my
room,
God.
It was incredible.
I seriously still am chasing that sound in my head because and it went by so fast that it was like one of the most incredible moments of my life.
Yeah,
it really was.
Yeah, it was amazing, man. That medley we did, man.
Yeah. It was crazy. Yeah. We did a Santana medley and it's like, I remember that feeling. The band was just killing it. His brother was playing.
Yeah, it was an incredible jazz band.
Yes,
man.
Yes.
Like all these young all-stars, man. These youthful all-stars.
Yeah. And then everybody soloed. And then we had like, we were all singing and doing all these Santana tunes.
Yeah.
And Santana's sitting in the front row.
Right there.
Like just right there listening to us and reacting to his songs being sung by all these, like, you know, music students or, you know,
awesome.
Like music makers. It was crazy. And then these dancers came out and the crowd goes nuts. You're just like... It was like over the top.
Yeah,
it was so over the top. And Herbie
Hancock
sitting backstage, like, I mean, it was just like, what?
It was awesome, man.
So I've had these like ridiculous experiences with them. And, you know, you've always been a big advocate of the arts. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
man.
How did you like really decide that you wanted to focus on editing? Because that is, it really is a very detailed part of making art.
Right, right. Well, actually, the first film I ever edited was an edit.
Hey, look at this guy.
But no, my pops is in the industry producing commercials.
Right.
He would always fly out here, shoot on Warner Brothers set, and brought me out a few times, got the bug, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's going on as a kid, hanging out, studios. And then, Yeah, man, when the time came to kind of apply for college, just put something together of all my, you know, like Nikki said, I ran track and cross country in high school. Put together all my high school running footage.
That's right.
To get into NYU, actually.
Wow.
Because USC wouldn't accept, and I don't know, they may still not accept video submissions. Anyways, it's another story.
Why? Because it's your time? Like, they want to see you
it's
do
just
it?
Their prerequisites. Like, they... At that time,
they wanted film, right?
No, they just wanted writing samples.
Oh, just writing samples?
Yeah, that was the application process.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, tell me about it. But I got an NYU right away based on this film, and yeah, I just loved it, man. I was cutting on 3/4, so, you know, for those of youngins who don't know, it's like tape.
Yeah.
Tape to tape.
I was just about to ask that because. Like, as a musician, I love working with tape more than digital.
Yeah.
Do you have a preference, like, working
with
tape?
Well, no, I didn't work with tape long enough. You know, I never cut film in my own hands, you know.
No, I mean, a lot of people don't. We just do more takes.
But learning on tape, you definitely learn the process, and you can't really go back.
Right.
Like you can now, you know, you can just
hit digital's so flexible.
Oh, yeah, you can hit the undo button 1,000 times, you know.
you probably won't get much done that way, though.
Well, and it also, you know, people don't think as much. Right. You know what I mean?
I went to film school in Chapman. We shot on 16 millimeter.
Perfect, yeah.
And it's
a great way to learn.
It's, you have to do with the camera bag. You got to change the film in the bag just using your hands.
That's right, yeah.
And it's crazy because you'll do a whole day of shooting, and you don't know if you got anything.
Right.
Until you send it off and it comes back.
It's a lab, yeah.
So it's crazy. Like
so the pre-planning,
everything,
the shots are like intense. You know, the pre-production is like,
and as soon as you hit record, money is just flying away,
right?
And burning
exactly. Whereas now, you know,
you can see it.
Well, that and then there's like the pre-planning on a lot of these, especially kids' projects. They don't know about pre-production. They just go out and start shooting because they can.
Shoot on your phone.
It doesn't cost a thing. You know what I mean? You're not wasting money.
No, you had... Like, when you made a film then, this was like the early 2000s, late 90s, you had to, like, want to make a film.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, let's go dick around with our phones.
There's no dicking around.
I never thought about, like, the fact that you can't see what you're shooting.
You couldn't see it for days. I mean, professional studios, they have... monitors, you could watch it and you get it back that day.
Right.
But I, like, as a film student,
you could see is through the lens, you know.
As a film student,
you just
shoot,
hope you got it.
You'd shoot all day long.
Yeah.
You'd do burn through 3 reels of film and send it off, and you wouldn't know for a week.
That would drive me nuts.
If you got, and if you could get it, but it could be overexposed, underexposed, it could be a hair on the
lens. Yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That was filmmaking.
So when this director gave you the footage, did she give you notes or direction? Like, or would she just like make this better than what we think our last edit was?
No, she gave me overall notes, you know, on the script and what she intended it to be and how funny it was shooting it, you know, that it just didn't come across.
Have you seen you haven't ever seen the other cut?
No.
Are you not curious at all just to see what you did compared to what that other person thought?
Come on, George.
Not really.
Georgie.
Not really. I mean, you know what? To be honest, there wasn't enough time.
Yeah.
It wasn't enough time for me to sit
there. But I mean, even now, just go back later, go get now, it's done.
Oh.
Let me watch and just see where what the choices I made.
I'm
not really a comparing kind of guy. You know, I try and stay away from.
Dude, you're an athlete. Of course you are, too.
You know, of course. I mean.
You're competitive. You ran track.
No, I'm competitive, but I mean comparing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't like to get caught in that trap because whether I think I'm better or less than someone, that's an illusion.
You know
what I mean? At the end of the day. So I didn't care to, you know, go back and look at his cut.
He's one of the most enlightened cats. Like, George, you've been a practicing Buddhist, right? For something like
I actually just
15 years, 20 years, maybe more than that? Since you were a kid, maybe?
No, well, that explains it then.
Yeah, and you know what? It's like, I always used to feel guilty around George when we were in rehearsal because I'd always be up to, like, mischief. And I'd come up to George, I'd be like, Oh, man, I just, my soul is not as pure as this guy's. Seriously, I love this cat. Oh, he's just man. He's just a good-natured guy. So even, like, you and I would definitely have seen that rough cut. We definitely would have gone through it and been like, oh, my God, my cut's so much better than but he's like, no. I don't believe in comparing. Like, that's, I mean, honestly, let's be honest, Eddie. You would have seen that cut. You would have looked at it before you started working on the new cut. True or false?
I wouldn't look at it to see how bad it was. I would have been curious to how they interpreted what I had. I wouldn't want to see it before because I'd want to put my own fresh take on it.
Right.
Yeah. I wouldn't be tempted by what they did, especially if I'm being brought in to fix what they did. I wouldn't want to see what they did. But I would like afterwards, I just want to know, like, how did I see this differently than that person see it? How did they see, you know, just not so much to go, mine's better than yours, but just to see the different perspective.
Yeah, definitely.
See, and I think for me, if I was doing it, I would want to know how their take was so that I did exactly the opposite. Because
right.
You don't know what if your instincts are the same.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like for me, I would have watched that three times before.
But then you're not cutting it to how you feel it should be cut. And that's
you
what
think
makes,
it would have been that much of an influence if you saw it before?
You might, it could be, you never know.
What if you made the exact same edit and you're like here, I'd like to
see. Yeah, but you're brought in as an editor because of the way you're out. Because of how you edit.
Right.
So that's your
right.
thing. So if it happens to line up exactly like the other person's, like, well, then you need to fire in a different editor because this is...
The truth is with movies and TV shows and film, it's the editors really... They're like the bassist in a band to me. Like bassist in a band.
Yeah.
Or bassist in a singing group.
Yeah, similar.
They're the most important.
Similar.
But like they're the most overlooked too when it comes to, you know, like the accolades or getting credit for
work. You can change a movie. I mean, that movie that Annie Hall was completely made in editing.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Annie Hall was a side character in that
Woody
movie.
Allen movie?
Well, the Woody Allen movie. The original film, she was a minor character.
Hmm.
And then the editing thing, it didn't work, so he went in and re-edited it, and now the movie became Annie Hall.
Wow.
It wasn't about her. She was like a small little part in the movie, and then it became...
I think they...
But that's what editing
really.
Can do.
Yeah.
You can completely change a film.
Let's play this trailer before we ask some more questions.
It, yeah.
You got the trailer, Eddie?
Yeah.
All right, here it is. How to... Love by the 10th date. Love it.
I've had a really difficult week.
Maybe we should spend some time apart.
What? I'm just gonna take this. I just wanna know, how can I make it last?
A relationship isn't real until the 10th date with no sex at all.
Has everyone here gotten to a 10th date?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna do it. And I've been on a bunch of dates in the last few weeks.
I had a little conflict in my schedule.
Did you bring a date to our date?
Wow. You are saved!
I accepted Christ for him.
Are you serious?
I always thought that I would be with someone by now. Maybe I'm just not cut out for love.
What you need to do is to get back to your roots. I do my hair, talk, check my nails.
Baby, how you doing? No one knows why love picks some people and not others.
Maybe the guy that I'm supposed to be with is the guy that I already knew.
Lifetime Movie Club, with a new movie added every single day. It's
yeah. Woo! Your estrogen levels must have gone up through
the roof. So many women.
Did you play this for your wife by chance? But
yeah,
before,
yeah, you
were
know,
like, yo,
she,
this.
She was so excited about it, you know.
Yeah.
That she had a little screening party with her girlfriends on
That's
Saturday.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I came over and kind of supported them.
And you supported. You were the hero,
you
man.
Know,
you were
the body work and everything. You know what I mean? Yeah, man.
Now let me ask you this. So you watched it on Saturday, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So were you critical of when you're like, it's done. There's nothing you can do. You're
right.
Watching it. It's finished. Were you critical, or were you able to just completely be just objective about it and watch it?
Of course, you know, some kind of critical is going to come out, you know. But I try and be in the moment, you know what I mean? Because I hadn't heard the final sound mix and the music.
Yeah.
So I was excited to hear that as well and just try to enjoy it. And of
Wait,
course,
you didn't hear all the music and stuff? All those?
I did, but I didn't hear the final mix.
Okay.
You know, and they were doing changes, you know, even after I saw the
Did you get to sneak in your subliminal dick pic
somewhere in there? No, you saw that, man.
I'm just curious if you did.
No, because there is one in the film. It's pretty funny, man. You got to see it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's his calling card, dick pics, man. In all of his movies.
Exactly. So, dude, that must have been a good feeling to have them all just love what you just did.
Yeah, it's great.
I made that.
It's great, yeah. Just need a little more time next time. But
yeah, that's good. But you know what? That probably helped, too. I feel like sometimes, I do my best work under pressure.
Yeah,
sometimes. So sometimes you don't have time to waste with, you know, just being kind of mediocre. You know what I mean? I think sometimes when you have more time, you make more mistakes.
Yeah.
You don't cut to the decision making. You know what I mean? It's like, you're like, this could work or this could work.
That's true.
You give yourself options.
That's true.
Do you feel like you just were able to eliminate that from the get-go, or were you just...
No, I mean, I'm like you. Sometimes I do work better under pressure, you know, but it's definitely more stressful too, you know. So I think less stress is always good as well.
Did you watch any shows on Lifetime just to see what the flow of some of those storylines and stuff were? Or were you just like,
no,
I'm going to make what I think would be the best?
No, not really. But, you know, my mom says, you know, I got the gig because she watched Lifetime.
Everybody's taking credit.
It's in the blood.
Well, your mom and dad are great people, so big shout out to them. And your brother's been a guest on the show.
That's what I heard, man.
He's been touring with Capital Cities. Yeah,
he played here.
Yeah, he played here.
Sweet.
He was badass.
We got some looks through the window.
Yeah, awesome. Sam was in the back like, oh, what's going on? There's a trumpet going on. And your brother's eyes were closed. He just played his ass off. It was great, though. I was
That's awesome, man.
I ain't stopping him. He's feeling it.
Yeah, he's rolling.
It's awesome, dude.
He's rolling.
You know? Who are some of your biggest influences as far as editors or filmmakers?
Here or just in general?
In general, yeah.
You know, I like dramas. You know, I like to be enlightened when I watch films. So, you know, I always love Clint Eastwood coming up. You know, I love those just dramatic films. You know, I loved all his High Plains Drifter, Unforgiven, all the way up to
Million Dollar Babies, Invictus,
Changeling, Invictus. You know, those where you're enlightened, you don't know. You know, all the way up to Sully. So those kind of films. Obviously, Hidden Figures just came out recently. There's not like, you know, I appreciate all different films and all different directors, but I did grow up liking a lot of Clint's films.
I just saw Fences. Have you guys seen that movie?
Mm-mm.
It's based on the August Wilson play, and Denzel Washington was directing the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I've never seen a play on film that actually felt like a play. And he did it. He was like one of the first directors I've ever seen that
mm-hmm.
made that completely feel like you were in the every scene, like you were that you felt like you were in a theater. It was amazing, and the performances were like ridiculous,
incredible.
So it's like I now watch movies because of the after doing that music video. I now watch movies to understand like flows of edits and like how many shots they choose and differentiate between each one. So it's like Scorsese is one of my favorites. He's very hands-on in the editing process,
man.
From what I've heard. Woody Allen, is he still in the process? Like
I think he still makes a movie a year, doesn't he? I believe.
Yeah.
I think he puts out a movie a year. And he has since he started, I think.
It's incredible, man.
Yeah, Match Point's one of my favorites of his. He's just...
I guess they're not all, you know, hits because you don't hear about all of them, but I think every single year he puts out a movie.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Awesome. And you've been working with a bunch of different directors over the last 10, 15 years, correct?
Yeah, mainly on the independent side for most of it. But
do you want to try to get into the studio type editing?
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely. So this is actually kind of like the first step, you know, more union work. And that's the goal, man.
Do you think there's more creative freedom with the independents versus like doing the big machine film projects?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that can work to the advantage of a film, and it could work to the detriment sometimes, you know, because I've worked with a lot of writer directors. And sometimes they have trouble cutting down.
Tarantino.
Right? So, but no, even the independents, and you know why? It's because they don't have to.
Right.
You know, there's no studio saying,
right,
yo, this film's got to be an hour and a half.
Right.
Hateful Eight could have been an hour and a half long.
Yeah. I've heard that.
There's a reason why they have director's cuts.
Yeah.
Put it that way. You know what I mean? It's because, you know, obviously they're in love, you know, with their film, and they want to see more and more and more and more and more, you know. But sometimes the story could be told in less amount of time and just be just as effective or even more, you know.
So. And how do you differentiate between the editing process with, say, a comedy versus a drama? Because, like, I've never edited something like that, you know. So how would you change the pacing for each? Or would you?
Yeah, well, I think the pacing is dictated by...
Well, the comedy has to be the timing. You have to know the timing of the joke for comedy.
Timing, scene, the action, you know. There's a lot of factors that go into pacing. But comedy, I would say, it's more takes. It's just catching the takes.
Yeah, you know it's like what
catching lightning.
It's like if it works, like different takes, different you know, some the joke might not work in one take, it works in the other. Whereas a drama sometimes, when people are connected in the scene, it you don't need 15 takes to see which is the better crying scene,
whatever. And usually have more takes just naturally doing the comedies because
let's try it this way.
Yeah, or directors will let good comedians go. You know, like I've worked with Kevin Hart and. You know, you don't really want to direct a guy like that all the time, you know, because he's just so funny off the cuff.
Yeah, you just don't want to let him go.
Yeah, yeah. He'll just give you, like, 15 funny takes, and then, you know, as a director, you're like, all right, I didn't need to do anything, you know what I mean? But it's tougher in post because you got all these great takes, and he does a bunch of different funny ways, and so...
And do you work with a team of editors, or is it you're doing it by mano y mano, like...
Mano y mano, most of the time. I've collaborated with a few co-editors, and then, you know, we have assistants that kind of organize everything, which is like the most important. You know, if the stuff isn't organized, it's
legwork,
really hard
the legwork
to,
of it.
Yeah, find it. But no, usually it's just one or two guys. So mainly I've been, you know, the sole editor.
There's this show that I've been watching called This Is Us, and one of the magic parts of the show is the editing. Like how they edit, they'll edit three different time periods together, and it'll be like this seamless timeline of flow of characters and stories that all completely connect. So it's like, I love seeing how editors can kind of paint that flow so seamlessly where you don't see the differences in time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
you'll
just like,
cuts,
it just feels like... It flows like you're watching something. When you both watch something, and specifically George, do you find that you're critical of other, you know, shows when you're watching? Like, it's like you probably notice a lot of bad edits. I'm sure both of you do.
Like you said, seamless, right? That's the key word. And that's, I think, a great editor, you know?
Yeah, we don't know it's being edited. That's
exactly. Like, I feel like a bad edit will take me out of a story. Right.
Right.
So, like, if I notice myself, like, noticing,
right,
then it's, like, not, you know, something's wrong there, you know. There's something threw me off, you know. And that may be intentional, you know, from the director's standpoint or whoever's creating it. But, seamless edit is one where you're just immersed in the story and, you know, there's no questions. It's just like, wow, that's a great ride. You know what I mean? So that's seamless.
Yeah, you don't want to notice.
We're like, you know, like you said, behind the scenes.
Right.
Know? Don't need the credit. Don't, you know, it's fine.
Have you ever been in a situation, you don't have to say who, but where you've edited something that you knew was the right choice and call, and a director or maybe the writer-director was like, nah, it's got to be this way. It's just got to be in the opposite way that your instincts were kind of pushing you to... kind of arrange something. You don't have to say who it is, but I'm just curious.
Well, of course, but you know, then we get down to, and I have this discussion with, you know, my father all the time. Is my opinion at the end of the day more valuable than someone else's? You know, I love the collaborative.
The answer is yes.
I love the collaborative aspect of film,
right.
You know, in that way. And, yeah, of course I've disagreed with edits or suggestions from directors all the time. But I'm always open, you know, let's try it, you
right.
know. And then sometimes they want it to stick, you know. And sometimes it works, you know, even though I didn't agree. And sometimes it doesn't. So whether, you know, I didn't agree or did agree, you know, it's let bygones be bygones. You know, I always try and get to a win-win. You know, that's what you want in all relationships, period. But I'll definitely express, like, you know, if I don't think something is going
on
the
level.
Right path. Yeah, yeah. Or if I, you know, feel like there should be, you know, certain films, I felt like it could be cut down, you know, and it didn't get cut down, you know.
Right.
And it just stuck that way. But that's where the director was happy. So, you know, it's not always going to be a win-win. I think it's really tough to have every project, every cut, you know, every scene, you know, win-win,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
But that's the goal. You know, if you can get like...
It's a balancing act.
If you can
sometimes.
Get like 50% win-win, that's great, you know, to me. Like... Because, you know, it's just natural for people to, you know, have different opinions.
And you've done a lot of commercial work. I think you've done a lot of... You've
yeah, I've
a
done
lot
a few commercials as well.
Stuff,
yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah, exactly. Like I said, that's what he started doing, producing commercials. So I've done a few
so
of those as well.
Taking this huge, like, you know, you said the original cut was 2.5 hours, correct?
Right.
So taking those, you know, 4-minute, 3-minute, 2-minute kind of ads... taking that experience and applying it to, you know, a 90-minute story, that had to be kind of an obstacle, right?
Well, yeah, but the rule of thumb is always when you're doing a movie, cutting a movie, and you're cutting down, you first look at, all right, is this scene helping to move the story forward?
Right.
You know? And that's where you start. And if a scene or a shot or lines, dialogue are not helping to advance the story, then it's like that's where you kind of just start pulling out, you know. And you find that there's a lot of fluff there, you know what I mean, when you start there. So I find that's
But it's
easiest,
so delicate.
That's
because
the easiest place to start.
If you work with a writer-director that's, you know, that's so attached and,
yeah,
you know what
right,
I mean? And you're
man.
Just cutting
you're
stuff.
Right. Oh, man.
It's like this.
I've been there, man.
Yeah.
I've been
totally.
There. It's like, no.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I said, it's like their baby. You know what I mean? So, but no, fortunately, man, this last one, Nzinga Stewart, major props. She's coming, you know, up and coming. Phenom, young director. She's awesome. She's open, man.
That's
she's,
awesome. That's yeah, the way you gotta be.
She's just like, hey, you know. I'll make a suggestion, and she'll say, hey, yeah, let's try it, you know, and she was writer-director. So it was really encouraging to see, like, someone who's so close to the script be open.
Yeah,
know?
And to be objective, step
happen.
Away.
Oh,
and
it doesn't happen all the time.
Especially,
yeah.
like, after the first edit she saw, she was probably like, this is just not where it's at. You know what I mean?
That's what she told
She called on you, man.
That's what she told me, yeah.
Where can people find you if they want you to edit their stuff? Like, where? What's your website? How can people find you?
You can check it out online, www.iedit.com. That's where
Keep
you
it
start.
Simple, man.
iEdit, E-Y-E-E-D-I-T, two E's in the middle.
Oh, nice.
All my info's on there. You know, you can hit me directly on my cell. Should I blast
you? You can if you want to.
All right, man. 310-466-1050. You know?
There you go.
Yeah.
Simple.
There it is.
You heard it. Porn stars call.
There
start
it is.
Calling.
I know, man. I saw a lot up there, man. What's going on in here, buddy?
Well, we have a quite, you know, we got some fans.
Okay. Well,
George, dude, you really are one of my favorite people on the planet.
Oh,
it
man,
has been
in,
such a pleasure to interview you. And
it's fun,
what's man. Next for you? What's going on? What's next for you? What are you working on? Are you taking a break after this?
Oh yeah, man! Definitely need a break after that. But no, I got a couple projects in the works. You know, don't want to tip anything right now.
No, that's
but,
okay. Well, why don't you come back? We're gonna invite you back in about
yeah,
10
man.
Months, and I want
Let's
you to tell
it,
us
man.
More
Let's
about what you're
it.
Working on.
Yeah,
man.
We'll keep rolling.
That's right, and I'll try my best to interview you with a straight face.
Okay.
On behalf of Eddie and I, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks, George.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.